Hello everyone, welcome to the TaxBite podcast series. My name is Pieter Dree and I'm very happy that I can welcome Joni and Hanne from my team in the virtual recording studio. Of course, they are well known to this audience. They have been speaking in other podcast editions with me. But for those who are tuning in for the first time, Joni is an expert in our team on Pillar 2, very experienced in systems, IT, automation, and Pillar 2. Hanne is also an expert in the Pillar 2 legislation, following, monitoring the implementation in the different countries. And I thought it was a good idea with when we record this, it's March 24, so beginning of 24 still. A lot of countries are implementing Pillar 2, and I thought it was a good idea to give an update on where we are. So welcome to the show, Joni and Hanne. I suppose we best start with a brief recap, actually. And Joni, maybe I can ask that to you. Can we give our listeners a little recap of where we are and the status of Pillar 2?
Yes, absolutely, Pieter. So a brief recap. Pillar 2 is essentially about making sure that all the multinational groups or large domestic groups pay a minimum level of taxes, regardless of where they are operating. So based on the EU directive, the due date of this implementation was the 31st of December 2023. And this is also what most EU countries have done. So it means that the Pillar 2 rules are now live and that they apply for financial years starting on or after the 31st of December 2023. And for groups that follow the calendar year, this means that this is applicable for fiscal years in starting in 2024. So it means as from this fiscal year.
Okay, thank you, Joni, for that. Hanne, the European Union has been a frontrunner in the implementation of Pillar 2. Does it mean that now, in early 24, all countries have implemented the Pillar 2 rules?
Not yet. It was already mentioned by Joni that the deadline for implementing the EU directive on Pillar 2 was the 31st of December of last year. So almost all EU member states have implemented Pillar 2 in their local legislation. However, there are some exceptions, such as Portugal and Greece, who have not yet enacted legislation. It is thus to be seen what these countries will do in the upcoming weeks or months, and whether the EU Commission, for example, will launch a formal infringement procedure against these countries. There are also five EU member states that have opted to benefit from the temporary deferral allowed by the EU directive. And the article in the EU directive allows that EU member states with no more than 12 in-scope MNEs headquartered in their state can elect to temporarily not apply the income inclusion rule and the under-tax profit rule for six consecutive financial years. So Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Malta and Slovakia went for this option. However, they can still implement a QDMTT. And that is what Slovakia already did.
Okay, well, thank you, Hanne. Okay, not all countries have the rules yet, but we can say that at least the majority of the countries in Europe have implemented in time, I think, the Pillar 2 rules, quite in line with the OECD and the European directive. Is that the same if we look outside of the European Union? So are there more differences outside of the EU?
There are some differences. There are already many countries that have implemented Pillar 2 in their local legislation, such as Switzerland, which has only implemented a QDMTT, Japan, which has only implemented the income inclusion rules, so not a QDMTT, but also South Korea and UK have implemented Pillar 2 in their local legislation. But besides that group, there are also several countries that have already released draft legislation or announced intentions to do so, such as Canada, Australia, and Thailand. But there is also still quite a big group with countries that have not taken any public action in terms of Pillar 2. You have, for example, India, Brazil, Philippines, and the US in this big group.
Okay, thanks, Hanne. So quite a big number of countries have legislation, but we see differences. And maybe At this point, I just want to make the audience aware of the fact that we have a country tracker on the Pillar 2 implementation. So on our website, it's publicly available. You can just take a look and track what countries are doing. And often the devil is in the detail with implementations, and we see the actual challenges and differences when we really look at the details of a country's implementation. And I think from that perspective, the country you know best is Belgium. So maybe, Yoni, if you look at the Belgian enactment of Pillar 2, aren't there some interesting differences with the directive?
Yes, so first, maybe let's take one step back. And the Belgium implementation of the EU directive is introduced as a separate law. So it means it is not included directly in the corporate income tax code, for example, but it's really a separate law. And in general, I think we can say that Belgium closely followed the EU directive and therefore also the OECD model rules. It introduces, for example, a domestic minimum top-up tax. But important here is that it also includes the transitional CVCR safe harbors. This is something that is not included in the directive, but as a separate guidance document of the OECD. Next to that, important to know is that the first compliance obligation for Belgian entities subject to this QDMTT will be the QDMTT return that will be due before the last day of the 11th month following the end of the financial year. So for groups that follow the calendar year, this means that the first compliance obligation with the QDMTT return will already be the 30th of November 2025. Next to that, the law explicitly mentions that there will be no possibility to request advance rulings from the Belgian ruling office with respect to subjects related to this global minimum tax. Next one, which is also a very important one, I think, for the Belgian groups, is that top-up tax is due under the QDMTT and the income inclusion rule, which is basically the taxes that are due by the ultimate parent entity of the group or another parent entity in Belgium. Those will be included in the prepayment schedule that is already applicable for corporate income tax purposes. So it means that in the event that insufficient prepayments are made during the year, that the company or the group will be subject to a certain tax increase. So in principle, the top-up taxes should be paid in 4 installments during the year in order to avoid this tax increase. But for 2024, companies have until the 20th of December of 2024 to fulfill this requirement. And as a last point, maybe also good to know for the audience, is that this separate law changed the refundable timing period of the R&D tax credit. So it reduced the refundability to 4 years instead of 5, making this a qualifying refundable tax credit for Pillar 2 purposes.
Maybe one small but important item to add to what Yoni just already mentioned. Now the Pillar 2 legislation is voted, the Belgian legislation has again increased the percentage of the basket rule from 40 to 70%. So also quite interesting for the groups active in Belgium.
Yeah, thanks, Hanne. And also for the overview, Yoni. Another interesting point is, of course, that the OECD, while countries are implementing the legislation, continues to publish guidance. If we look forward, even in March, some new guidance will come of the OECD. But for instance, also in December, new guidance came out just at the moment that countries were actually voting their legislation. This must not be easy for countries. Yoni, how are countries dealing with this continuous flow of new guidance?
Yes, indeed, Peter, as you already hinted towards it, it's not easy for jurisdictions to keep track of the latest updates and also keeping the legislation up to date with these latest guidance. So, for example, for Belgium, recently a draft law was published to change or to update the Pillar 2 law to include some of these additional guidance that was not yet included in this Pillar 2 legislation. So the new draft law includes, amongst others, the marketable transferable tax credits, so the credits that you can sell on the market. It also includes the QDMTT safe harbor, that in certain circumstances you can avoid making the calculation twice, so one time for the QDMTT and one time, for example, under the income inclusion rule. And then, of course, as well, the UTPR safe harbor. This will be important for groups that are headquartered in the US.
Something that might also be useful for the audience is the fact that the Belgian Minister of Finance has recently provided some additional guidance on the disclosure of deferred tax assets in the context of Pillar 2. So under the Pillar 2 rules, all deferred tax assets that are reflected are disclosed in the financial accounts, may be taken into account for your GLOBE ETR calculation. But it's not clear how these deferred tax assets need to be reflected or disclosed. And the Belgian Minister of Finance has clarified this point in a reply to a parliamentary question. He said that it is sufficient that a total amount of deferred tax assets is mentioned in the consolidated financial statements, provided that a more detailed overview would then be available in case of a tax audit. So in Belgium, it is thus not required that each separate constituent entity discloses its deferred tax assets in their separate financial statements. But it is, however, to be seen how other countries will interpret this point and whether they will apply a more strict approach than Belgium.
Yeah, thanks, Hannah. That's a very good point, a very interesting point. It's a question we get from a lot of our clients, I think, that's what does it mean, disclosing the tax assets? And I think it's good that countries take a pragmatic approach like Belgium and are flexible for companies and basically say, well, whatever you disclose, as long as you have the details, it should be fine. That's the underlying message. But indeed, as you rightfully say, the question will be whether this will be accepted in all other countries outside of Belgium. So the recommendation that we have is to really make sure that your disclosures are as detailed as possible. And we see groups not only looking into the disclosures at their consolidated financial statements, but even revisiting what they can disclose in national financial statements, for instance, losses or other assets, or even in the accounts where possible, where acceptable under the accounting principles, even book a kind of a gross and net amount in the books so that at least you have a trace in the accounts to the deferred tax assets and liabilities per legal entity. Bottom line, they are not recognized, but there is a trail in the accounts. So here I think it's good to see that there is pragmatism in the position of the tax authorities. I would say for the audience, be careful, be mindful that other countries may be more strict. Thank you, Hanna Ioni, for this overview. I think that's exactly what I wanted to do in this little chat between us, to give an update to the audience. So I'm sure further updates will follow in the coming weeks and months to come. But what I take from this discussion is at least that a lot of countries have implemented Pillar 2 rules. We see a lot of differences between countries and the details of their implementation. So I think it's important to continuously monitor that development. And as I said earlier in this podcast, use the tracker we have available where you can follow up on our website the implementation of Pillar 2 in the different countries. And with that, I would like to thank the audience for tuning in. And of course, want to thank Ioni and Hanna for being present in my recording studio. Thank you.